Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We have a stack of notes today that, I'll be honest, looked a little dry at first glance.
Chuckled. Yeah, I can see that.
I saw the words industrial fabrication, switchgear, and I thought, okay, here we go. But then you start reading about the actual forces involved, the physics, and just the sheer amount of money in this space, and you realize this isn't boring at all.
No.
This is the invisible backbone of, well, everything.
It really is. It's one of those things that's just, you know, hidden in plain sight. We all see the solar panels. We see the EVs driving around. We hear about these massive AI data centers.
Right.
But we hardly ever think about how does all that power get from point A to point B without, you know, melting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is our mission today. We're going to connect the dots between that huge global energy transition and this very specific, very intense process called busbar fabrication.
Which, yeah, it sounds super technical, but at its core, it's really just solving a big physics problem.
How do you move immense power safely? Okay, so let's define our terms right up front. A busbar. We aren't talking about the little wires in your phone charger. What is this thing?
Think of it as the main artery. It's a solid strip of conductive metal, usually copper or aluminum, and it acts as the heavy lifter for electricity and distribution networks and big control panels.
And the scale here is what just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The research we have says these things can carry currents over 1,000 amperes.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, to put that in perspective for everyone, the outlet in your wall is running on a 15 or 20 amp breaker?
Right, on a good day.
So we're talking about 50, maybe even 100 times that much power going through one single bar.
Correct. And because the power is so high, the stakes for making them are, well, they're incredibly high. These are not just cosmetic pieces of metal.
The notes highlight this one specific term, burrs, which sounds like something you get on your socks after a hike. But here, it's a disaster waiting to happen.
It is. A burr is just a rough edge left over after you cut or punch metal. If you're building a shelf, who cares? But on a busbar, that tiny rough edge becomes a serious safety hazard.
How so?
It can disrupt the electrical flow. It can create what's called an arc point, which can lead to equipment failure or even a fire.
So this entire industry, which is projected to hit something like $18.7 billion by 2027.
Yeah.
It's all basically about cutting, bending, and punching holes in metal strips with just flawless precision.
And it's driven almost entirely by the demand for renewable energy in these huge data centers. They all need massive power distribution. And you can't just, you know, go buy these things at the hardware store.
Right. They have to be custom made.
Yeah.
So let's get into the physics of it.
Yeah.
Because I think I naively assumed that bending metal is easy. You clamp it, you hit it, it bends.
Yeah, not quite.
But the material itself seems to be fighting back.
Yeah, it is fighting back. Let's take copper. It's the gold standard for this because it's so conductive, which lets you build more compact installations. But copper is ductile, and it work hardens.
Work hardens. So the more you bend it or punch it, the tougher it gets.
Exactly. The molecular structure literally resists you. The notes mention that to punch just a standard M12 hole, so about the size of a AAA battery, through a 10 millimeter thick copper bar.
Yeah.
The machine needs to exert over 40 tons of force.
40 tons? That's the weight of a fully loaded semi-truck.
Concentrated on a spot the size of a coin.
For one hole.
Just for one hole. And that's before you even try to bend it. And that leads to one of my favorite engineering problems, spring back.
I loved this detail. Is this idea that the metal has a memory.
Precisely. If you need a perfect 90-degree bend, you can't just bend the copper to 90 degrees and stop. The second you release the pressure, it tries to go back to its original shape. It springs back 2 to 5 degrees.
So if you stopped at exactly 90, you'd end up with an 87-degree angle, and your whole expensive cabinet won't fit together.
You got it. So the machine has to calculate an overbend. It might push the metal to, say, 93 degrees, knowing that the physics of the material will let it settle right back at a perfect 90.
It's a constant game of predicting how the metal is going to react.
Always.
And there was another term in here that felt like pure sci-fi engineering, the neutral axis.
Ah, yes. The neutral axis. This is where geometry gets very, very real.
So help me visualize this. When I bend a piece of paper, I just see a bend. I don't see an axis.
Okay, think of it like this. Imagine you have a thick book and you try to bend it. The pages on the outside of the curve have to stretch. The pages on the inside get all bunched up and compressed.
Okay, I can see that.
Metal does the exact same thing. The material on the outside of the bend stretches and actually gets thinner. The material on the inside compresses. But there's a theoretical line, right down the middle, where nothing changes. No stretching, no compressing.
And that's the neutral axis.
That's it.
And why does a machine operator need to care about a theoretical line?
Because the stretching moves your holes. If you punch a hole, and then you bend the bar near that hole, the metal stretching physically pulls the hole out of position. If the machine doesn't calculate that neutral axis perfectly, you finish the part, and your bolt holes don't line up.
And I'm guessing in this industry, you can't just drill it a little bigger.
Absolutely not. A millimeter of error might as well be a mile.
So we have this really stubborn material. Let's talk about the machines that actually tame it. The notes describe a pretty big evolution from manual work to, well, robots.
It starts with the most basic function. Cutting. Old school, you might use a saw, but sawing copper is a nightmare. It creates all this conductive dust.
And I'm guessing conductive metal dust floating around a factory that makes electrical equipment is a bad idea.
It's catastrophic. Huh. That dust settles on circuit boards, causes short circuits. It's why modern machines use hydraulic shearing. It's not a saw blade at all. It's a hardened steel blade moving against a fixed blade with about 30 tons of pressure.
So it just, it shears it cleanly, like a guillotine.
One clean go, no dust, no waste, and the speed difference is incredible. There was a case study in our sources, a European switchgear manufacturer. Before they automated, one cut took 45 seconds.
And after?
12 seconds, but that's not even the most important number.
What was?
They reduced their scrap material by 3.2%.
Now, 3.2%, that sounds like a rounding error. Why is that a big deal?
It's all about the cost of copper. In this business, the raw material is 60, maybe 70% of the final cost of the product. Copper is just wildly expensive. So if you can save 3% of your copper, that's pure profit.
That makes sense. And that efficiency comes from what they call CNC machines, computer numerical control.
Right. This is the lights out manufacturing idea. This is the tech frontier. You load a pallet of raw copper bars, you press go, and the machine does everything else.
It loads and unloads itself.
It can run unattended, and it uses this brilliant software feature called nesting.
Which is not about birds.
Chuckles. No. It's an optimization algorithm. Think of it like playing Tetris, but with pieces of metal that cost a fortune. The software looks at all the different lengths you need for a job and figures out the perfect way to arrange those cuts on a raw bar to create the absolute minimum amount of waste.
It's squeezing every last penny out of the material.
Precisely. And it's doing it with tolerances of plus or minus 0.05 millimeters.
Which is finer than a human hair.
On a thick slab of industrial metal, that's the standard now.
Okay, so that's the, you know, the Cadillac solution, the big robot. But the notes also talk a lot about these three-in-one machines for shops that aren't massive factories, the Swiss Army knives of the industry.
They are. The whole concept is about saving space. You get one unit that can cut, punch, and bend. You don't need three big machines eating up your whole workshop.
But the notes warn about a trap here, the difference between sequential and simultaneous operation.
This is a classic bottleneck. A cheaper machine often has just one hydraulic pump. So you can have three operators standing there, but if one person is bending a bar, the other two guys at the punch and the cutter,
they're just waiting.
They literally have to stand there and wait until the pump is free. You're paying three salaries for the output of one person.
It's false economy.
It is. The more advanced machines, like the HBC A120 they mentioned, have three independent hydraulic power units. Three people can work at the same time, full speed, you triple your throughput.
And yet, the deep dive also pointed out that sometimes the dumber, less automated machine is actually the smarter purchase.
Yes. This is such a crucial lesson in business logic.
Yeah.
They have these economic machines like the HBC EA120EH. It strips away the computers and the servo motors. The operator has to slide the bar into place by hand. It takes more skill.
But it's way cheaper.
Way cheaper. Maybe 20,000 euros versus 85,000 for a CNC. And the analysis showed that for a small maintenance shop making just a few hundred parts a month, buying the big robot would be a financial disaster.
The labor savings would never cover the cost of the machine.
They ran the ROI, the return on investment. For a small shop, it would take something like 20 years to pay off the CNC. By then, it's obsolete. So for them, the manual machine is absolutely the correct financial move.
So it's not always about newer is better.
Not at all. It's about a right tool for the job.
I want to pivot to a different scenario.
Yeah.
We've been in the factory. What happens when something breaks out in the field? The notes talk about workshop and portable machines.
Yeah, picture this. you're a technician.
Mm.
The switch gear in a hospital basement just blew out. The power is down. You can't just take the broken parts, drive them back to a factory, wait a day, and come back.
You have to fix it on site. Right now.
You have to bring the factory to the basement. And that's where these portable units on wheels, like the HBC PC120, come in.
It does everything.
It's modular. You swap the heads, you put on the cutting head, make your cut, take it off, put on the punch head, make your holes. It's not as fast, but it's incredibly versatile.
And it also doubles as a cable crimper.
That's a huge feature. If you're working out of a service van, every inch of space matters. You don't want a separate, heavy hydraulic crimper. This machine's power pack can do that job, too.
Mm, smart. Okay, now I want to get into what I think was the most intense part of this research. The difference between low voltage and medium voltage.
This is the danger zone.
Right. My first thought was just, you know, electricity is electricity. But once you cross a certain threshold, this rules of physics get much, much stricter.
They really do. Low voltage, which is generally under 1,000 volts, that's most of the market. And it's somewhat forgiving. A slightly rough edge is bad, but the system probably won't blow up right away.
But medium voltage, that's 1,000 volts all the way up to 35,000 volts.
And here you run into a phenomenon called partial discharge. And this is why you need those multi-ton, hyper-precise machines.
What exactly is partial discharge?
Okay, so imagine you punched a hole, but your tool was a little dull. It left a tiny, microscopic, jagged edge, a burr. In a medium voltage system, that tiny, sharp point acts like a miniature lightning rod. It creates what's called a localized field concentration. All the electrical stress focuses on that one tiny point.
And what does that do?
It starts to break down the air or the insulation right around it. It creates these tiny little sparks, these chemical reactions you can't see or hear. But it's happening, and it is slowly eating away at the insulation.
It's like invisible termites in the system.
That's a perfect analogy. And over months or maybe years, that damage spreads until one day, boom, catastrophic failure. The whole switchgear just blows up, all because of one rough edge on one hole.
That is genuinely terrifying. So for MV, precision isn't about looking neat. It's about not blowing up the building.
It's about safety and reliability, full stop. You need perfection. You need edge rounding, polishing. There was a case study of a utility manufacturer who bought a €420,000 CNC machine for this.
That's a staggering amount of money.
It is. But their processing time dropped from 25 minutes per bar down to 8 minutes. And here's the real number. Their first pass quality went to 99.7%.
Meaning almost zero mistakes.
And, more importantly, almost zero risk of sending out a time bomb. They paid off that €500,000 machine in 3 years.
It just shows that quality in this field is an absolute safety requirement.
It is.
Before we wrap, let's touch on the hidden details. Maintenance. Because these machines are beasts, but they're also surprisingly sensitive.
They're hydraulic systems. Mm. And the lifeblood is the oil. The notes compare checking the oil to a blood test, and that's not an exaggeration.
What goes wrong with it?
Heat and dirt. If the oil gets over 60 degrees Celsius, it starts to break down chemically. It loses its lubricating properties. And if it gets dirty, that dirt is like liquid sandpaper running through your pumps and valves.
You kill the machine.
You kill the machine. And then there's the blade science, the clearance between the punch and the die.
This was really counterintuitive. You'd think you want the punch and the hole underneath to fit perfectly tight.
Like a pair of scissors, right?
Yeah.
But in heavy metal, that destroys the tooling. You need a tiny gap. The Goldilocks zone is about 5 to 8% of the material's thickness.
So if you get it wrong, too tight or too loose?
If it's too tight, you get massive friction, heat, wear. The tool can snap. If it's too loose, the metal tears instead of shearing cleanly, and you get those dangerous burrs we were just talking about.
It really paints a picture of a job that is half brute force, half laboratory science.
That's a great way to put it. You're applying 60 tons of force, but with the precision of a watchmaker.
So to pull this all together, we've gone from a raw slab of copper to the absolute backbone of our electrical grid.
It's the enabling technology. We talk about a green future, electric trucks, AI. You can't plug any of that stuff in without bus bars. And you can't make them at the scale we need without these kinds of machines.
They're the unsung heroes of the whole thing.
They really are.
There was one final provocative thought in the notes I want to leave everyone with. It was about the total cost of ownership.
This is so important. We all tend to look at the sticker price. This machine is €100,000, but that's just the price to get in the door.
Right. The machine has to eat.
It does. A CNC center can burn through €14,000 of electricity a year. The tooling, the punches, the blades, they wear out. A new set might cost 4,000 euros, and you might go through several sets a year.
So the cheapest machine to buy might actually be the most expensive one to run.
Exactly. In this industry, if you only look at the purchase price, you are setting yourself up to lose money. You have to look at the energy, the speed, the scrap rate, everything.
That's a lesson that applies to a lot more than just bus bars.
It certainly does.
So next time you're in your basement and you see that gray electrical panel on the wall, don't just walk by. Think about the copper inside, the 40 tons of force it took to punch those holes, and the invisible backbone keeping your lights on.
It's a whole hidden world in there.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you on the next one.